Hi, Jeff.
Good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you very much again for your presence on my show. So, I just wanted to tell about the recent works that you're doing to my audience and let them know the changes that you are doing to help the humanity in different ways.
Of course. So late last year, we had our annual AWS conference, which we call reInvent, and we hold reInvent once a year in Las Vegas, in usually the very end of November, early December. And so one of the things that my team does, the AWS News Blog team, we're a global distributed team. We've got bloggers in many, many different parts of the world. We all work together. So in late September, early October, we start actually getting our plans in place for how we're going to write many tens of blog posts for reInvent. And so that's what I spent all of October, all of November in the process of getting ready, because all the different teams that make up AWS, they look forward eagerly to reInvent and they want to have, something new and exciting to launch for our customers. So as we talk today, I would love to tell you more about our blogging process and some of the cool things that we were able to launch for our customers in
So
December.
definitely. Can you be more specific so that it will be great?
Absolutely. So, as a bit of introduction, I am the VP and Chief Evangelist for AWS. I have worked at Amazon for over 20 years. And back in 2004, I launched the AWS News Blog as a way for us to start sharing all of these cloud services and cloud launches and customer success stories with our audience. So that blog is almost 20 years old now. And in those last almost 20 years, I've written over 3,300 posts for that blog. So I'm best known as a blogger. But these days, in the early days, I wrote everything all by myself. But as we started scaling up, we put a global team together. So today I'm very lucky to be able to work with bloggers from a number of different locations around the world, from Europe and from Asia. So we have this great global team. And what we do every year is at the very, very beginning of October, as reInvent season starts to happen, we get together online for 3 solid days. And we have this really awesome process that we call speedstorming. The idea of speedstorming is that all of the different teams that are planning to launch something new and exciting at reInvent, they each get 15 minutes to tell me and the other bloggers all about what they're working on. And during that time, we listen intently, we take some notes, we get to ask a couple of questions. And at the end of those 3 days, we've been listening and deciding what things we find personally appealing and that we would like to write about. And then we divide up all of these launches between all of the different bloggers. And I ended up with, I think, like 22, 23 different things that I was going to write about. And then October and November are really the most intense, exciting time of the year for us. We have this Amazon tradition where any team that is going to launch something, they write a very standard document that's called a PRFAQ. So that is an acronym that stands for press release plus frequently asked questions. And the idea of the PRFAQ is that in a the press release has a very standard format. It's 1.5 printed pages. And in that 1.5 printed pages is a complete overview of what the team is going to launch, what it is called, what it does, the customer problems that it solves, perhaps a couple examples of how customers can put it to use. And so that's always a standardized page and a half. Now, backing that up is a longer document, the frequently asked questions, which is where, as the team is defining this new launch, they try to anticipate all the different questions that are asked both internally and externally. And they put very high quality answers to all those questions in the document. What this means is that this single document, this combined PRFAQ, is enough for me as a blogger to fully understand what this launch is going to be all about. So part of our process is to simply read these documents, get a very deep understanding of them. We then use the service, and we each of the bloggers, we have a slightly different process. For me, I always like to create this visual diagram called a mind map. And the mind map is basically this nice kind of outline structure that I can take all the different facts from the PRFAQ, from using the service, and put them all on one page so I can fully understand everything about the launch. One thing that's very important that we always do on the blog team is we make sure that we personally use and understand the service. We always write from the standpoint of actual experience. I always tell the teams, you're wonderful and you're all great people, but I don't believe a word that you tell me until I actually use your service yourself. And so we by being able to write from that firsthand developer architect hands-on experience, we think that makes us a lot more authentic and a lot more credible. So we've read the PRFAQ, we've used the service, we have the mind map, we write the first draft of the blog post, and then we share it internally. We start to get feedback. We iterate 2, 3, 4, 5 times to make sure that we've got all the facts and all the details exactly 100% correct. Part of being authentic is that your credibility and your reputation rests on your content. So you're always trying to make sure that it is absolutely perfect. And then once it's polished, we kind of sign off on it and check the box and say it's ready to go. And then during reInvent, as our CEO and our senior VPs are presenting all these different services on stage, we're listening very, very carefully. And at the exact moment they announce a new service, when they announce, for example, a new Amazon S3 storage offering, that very exact moment, we publish the blog post. And so seconds after the announcement from the keynote stage, the customers have access to the content that we have created for them. So in the space of just a couple hours of keynotes, the audience is getting the benefit of months and months of work to get high quality, accurate, detailed information to them. It's a very exciting time. It's intense. It's stressful. Every time you enter into it, you think, I'm in way over my head. I've got too much work to do. But we work really hard. We support each other. We review each other's content, and we make it happen year after year after year. So that's a bit of my annual process. It's a little different, a little bit better, a little bit smoother every year.
So how was the recent reInvent?
reInvent was amazing. So this was number 12, I believe. We had one that was virtual during the pandemic, but we had, I think, somewhere close to 60,000 customers and partners and employees were at reInvent. To me, it's really awesome because I get to meet and connect with all those people. I get to meet some of my colleagues that maybe I worked with very, very closely during the preparation of all this blogging material. But I also get to meet with my audience. I get to meet with the partners, with the customers, with the AWS community builders, with the AWS heroes, with the readers, with the fans. To me, it's incredibly helpful because I get to meet my audience firsthand. And when I'm sitting here in my office, I'm creating all this content, being able to meet that audience and to know who they are and to hear kind words from them, that understand what it is that they like about the content I've created and shared with them. As a writer, and especially with Amazon's model of customer obsession, being able to hear directly from our audience is so important. And being able to meet people and say hello and get a sense of who they are and what they've done and where they're coming from, I find that part of reInvent incredibly valuable.
So last year, exactly in this time, I have interviewed you, and you have told me the present status of the services. And what are the things that happened from last January to this January?
Oh, wow. Well, that would take an entire week, I think, to describe. We do a couple, I think, unique things at AWS as we're launching services. The first thing that we always do is that we always do an initial launch of a service, and we try to get this to a level we call the MLP, So MLP is short for minimum lovable product. We want to make enough of a service out there that the first customers can look at that and say, I understand what it is and what it does, and I think it's good enough that I can actually put it to use. And we try to hold ourselves to a pretty high standard when we launch that initial version of the service, but we always have a roadmap for other things that we're going to add afterward. However, after we do that launch, we immediately start to hear from customers with feedback of, could you make it work with this? Or can it do this other thing? Or can it scale this particular way? So you'll find that any launch, there's that initial big launch, and then there's a long series of additional launches after that, as we start to respond to feedback, as we start to add in all the extra details that our customers are asking for. It's probably impossible to give you an overview that says these are all the things that we launched in the space of a year. I mean, you can look at almost any Amazon service and say that we have made major enhancements to that particular service. As the entire world has been really excited about generative AI, I think we've done some really, really good work in that space in the last 12 months. We've been focusing on ML and AI as a company for a very, very long time. If you look to the history of, for example, our SageMaker service, and you can see that SageMaker has helped developers to build and train and deploy ML models, but that service has been around for quite a while. We continue to add additional features to the SageMaker service. But just in the last year, we've done, I think, a lot of really incredible steps forward. We launched an AI service called Amazon Bedrock, and Amazon Bedrock gives developers access to a variety of different AI models. So AI Bedrock is essentially this common programming model that can give developers access to LLMs from Amazon and from a number of our companies that we work with to build and make LLMs available. And so then we ourselves and then other developers, of course, are using Bedrock as a starting point to build text-based applications, to build chat applications, to build image-based applications. One of the cool things that we launched last year is called Party Rock. So Party Rock is an AI playground that makes it very easy for developers to build AI-powered applications. They don't need to write any code. They can start by simply going to partyrock.aws. They enter in a description of the kind of application that they would like to build. And then Party Rock, using AI, actually sets up the first iteration of the application within a few seconds. After that, the user can either take that application and deploy it as is and publish it so that their customers can use it, or they can enhance it. They can fine-tune the prompts, they can fine-tune the messaging, they can add some sophistication to it. And so I love these two examples because Bedrock is very specifically for developers, and it's to help developers incorporate AI into their applications. Party Rock is more for kind of a regular customer that maybe they don't understand how to write code. They don't quite understand all the details of AI, but they have a good sense that it's going to help them. And so Party Rock has a much more general audience where they can simply say, I'd like an app to do the following. And I need an app to help me make recommendations for a trip, or I need an app to make some recipe recommendations, or help me to write a review or to summarize. And Party Rock will draw upon the different AI models, and it'll help you to choose those models to solve that particular problem. So these are just a few, I think, of many dozens of AI and ML innovations that we've done in the last year.
So before asking about another question that is related to your tech career from last 20 years, I just want to quickly say about my sponsor for this, my podcast, quickly. So it's Start Adam. Sales and customer facing teams often switch between several communication tools, causing time management and visibility issues that can slow down deal velocity. The solution joins Start Adam, where conversation converts. With Start Adam, your team can centralize all communication within your chat tool. No more switching, waiting, or fragmented chats. Because chat messaging is where business gets done. Sales teams can stay in Slack or Microsoft Teams and connect with customers, leads, or candidates on their existing chat tool, building better relationships through constant communication in inbound or outbound messaging. Make it encrypted and compliant. Plus, bring all communication in your CRM or ticketing system, no data entry required. Join Stack Adam to enhance customer relationships and close deals at hyperspeed with unified chat. Thank you, Jeff, again for your presence.
Sounds good. Absolutely. Great. So we talked a little bit about the blogging process and a little bit about reInvent. And what else should we chat about today?
So I can see you are working from long time as a person who is into communicating with computers and also communicating with people. So this long time journey, how it is understanding computers and understanding human beings?
Wow, that's a wonderful question. And so I think for most of my career, I found myself in this, I think, somewhat unique spot where I've always been very interested in technology. From the time I was probably, let's say, 5 years old, I remember at the very early days of the space program and understanding what NASA was all about and understanding like the Saturn V rocket and the Apollo spacecraft and the moon landings. Those were all very, very much part of my childhood. And so I've retained that interest in technology to this day. And then later I became interested in just always any kind of building and making things. So wires and batteries and lights and electronics and then computers. Always really found that I would always not just like say, okay, here's some interesting tech and I appreciate it. But my goal was always to understand it and say, okay, with the computer, how many different levels of technology can I understand? I can understand at the high level language level. I can understand assembly language, machine language. I can understand the individual instructions, the logic gates. Maybe I can understand even some of the electronics and the physics that go to that. And I think that we're in a really great field where, should you have that interest, you can really understand our technologies at all those different kinds of levels. And then while you can always work at the surface level and you can treat each of these as some kind of a very powerful abstraction, and that's a great way to get a lot of things done without paying too much attention to what's inside. But should you choose to understand what's inside, there's always more and more and more to learn. Each time you actually learn something new about another level deeper inside your tech, it's going to give you some insights that you're going to be able to be even better at your job. So I've always had that desire to understand what's inside. And I was kind of the typical child who would always be taking things apart to explore and understand them. But I also found that I enjoyed, once you have that understanding, to me, the next logical step has always been explaining. And so knowing enough about the facts to be very comfortable telling other people about what that technology might happen to be. And over the course of years and years and many different jobs and lots of communication with marketing people and going to speak at conferences, I think I very, very slowly, almost in a way that's too slow to measure, made the transition from being deep inside of engineering to being, I think at this point, kind of equal parts marketing and technology. You probably wouldn't want to have me build some sophisticated piece of software at this point in my career, but I can certainly understand it and appreciate it well enough to ask hard questions and to appreciate it and then to explain it. So that very, very slow transition from all engineering to being able to be part of marketing and to be able to share what I know, that's been, I think, the overall multiple decade arc of my career to date. Now, with all that said, I still enjoy building. If you could see my room around me, I've got Raspberry Pis in a bunch of different places. I've got strips of LEDs. I've got my 3D printer in the corner. I've got some Lego. I've always got several different projects I'm working on at any given time. And I like to make things. And I think as a builder and a maker, and this applies, I think, a lot to software development. when you immerse yourself in the services, the data structures, the APIs, and sometimes you set out to solve a particular problem, and that's great. But sometimes you just kind of want to explore. You say, I don't really have a goal in mind, but I want to take this particular technology or API or material. I want to push it as far as I can go and just kind of see what I can come up with. So sometimes I set out to solve problems as a builder, but sometimes I say, let me just explore and see where I can go with this.
What are those subjects for you to that made you to be a good evangelist and vice president of AWS?
All right. So I would say that the primary aspect that works well for me is always making sure I have a very deep and full understanding of what I'm talking about, and making sure that whenever I'm face to face with a developer or an architect or a CTO, that I make very, very clear that at some point, and I can't remember all the details of every service that we have, but at some point, make it very clear that I did have that very detailed understanding of the service, and that there's a tendency sometimes when you progress in your career and you get higher level titles, you start to become a little bit abstract. And instead of talking about specific details and technologies, you start to talk in kind of vague conceptual ways. And the other high level people look and say, okay, you're just kind of using a bunch of buzzwords, but they respond to the buzzwords. I don't think that's the best effective way to communicate with technical audiences. You need to establish your credibility. You need to stay at the most detailed way possible, but you also need to understand your audience and really say, okay, who am I speaking to? Do they want that high level overview, or do they want to go really deep into the weeds and into the tech and understand at a more refined and detailed level? And so part of being a great communicator, I think, is getting that very quick sense of your audience and then kind of zoom in, zoom out right away to decide, okay, what is the effective presentation style for this person? And then being very sensitive to your audience and saying, that this person's asking the right kind of questions. They want to know more details. Okay, let me start unfolding the details for them as quickly as possible to get to the detailed point.
So talking with a lot of experts in reInvent and talking with developers, architects, so what kind of information that you get and what kind of enhancements or changes that happens in the process?
You know, a lot of times what will happen is that I will put something new and I'll get messages from customers. It might be email messages or LinkedIn messages or just kind of in a direct meeting. And what they will say is, okay, we've seen your blog post. We understand this new service. And quite often what they'll be asking for is, how does this better connect to what I'm already doing? We see customers that are, it's the very rare customer that starts with the empty screen, the empty sheet of paper, the empty data center, and gets to build everything from scratch. So most customers have existing systems and services and operating modes, and they're always saying, how does this new thing that AWS did, how does that connect to and enhance and relate to the things I'm already doing? The industry is calling this hybrid or multi-cloud. They're talking about what are the different ways that all these different pieces can talk together. And so, you know, in pretty regularly, the question is not so much like, can you make this service more insulated? It's make it connect better to all the things I'm already doing.
Oh, what is new in your perspective? New is something you're hearing or seeing for the first time?
You know, it's hard to really pick new because each of these things happens fairly gradually and over a very long period of time. You know, there's been the last 18 months, there's been so much interest in generative AI. But then before that, the interest was really in the more foundational things like the machine learning models and the training models at very, very large scale. And you look at where we've been to where we are. Sure, there have been some, I think, kind of big revolutionary steps forward, but it's But watching it day to day, it's much more of a gradual step by step. And I would caution people that you're sometimes in tech, we look too much for the big, surprising, brand new thing. But it's also really important to pay attention to the day by day, week by week, incremental improvement of things that are already there. You look at well, let's talk about like compute power. So within AWS, our compute service is called EC2, the Elastic Compute Cloud. EC2 was launched way back in 2006. And at that point, we launched we launched EC2, which you could kind of say this is one of like the starting points of cloud computing. And when the customer chooses how much compute power they have, it's called the instance type. So the instance type determines the kind of processor, the processor speed, the amount of memory, networking parameters, local storage, and so forth. Over the years, we have announced hundreds of additional instance types with more of everything. Newer chips, more memory, more networking capacity, additional security features. But watching that over the long term has been really, really interesting. So we launched originally supporting the x86 chips with the x86 architecture. We in let's say 2018, we launched a new series of chips called the Graviton chips. So the Graviton chips use the ARM architecture. And since 2018, we've actually done almost five generations of Graviton chips. And so we're now at the point where we design our own processing chips for our instances. And so we at re:Invent, we actually announced, let me pull up the details here. We announced the what's called the Graviton 4 is our latest instance of the latest instance type. So we started in 2018 with the first Graviton chip. In 2019, we did the Graviton 2, and then 2021, the Graviton 3. And then in 2023, we did the Graviton 4. So this is one of those things where we continue to innovate and to iterate and to give more and more compute power at lower costs to our customers. So as we step forward, for example, the newest one is let me get the exact metric here. It's up to 40% faster than the previous generation for database workloads. It's 30% faster for web workloads, and for Java applications, it's 45% faster. So we continue to get more and more compute power. And this is just one example. I don't want to call it small because it's a gigantic step forward for our customers, but this is just one example of how we continue to innovate for our customers, the Graviton 4 more chips. And so what we'll do is we'll actually be launching instances powered by those chips and giving customers access to more compute power, more cores, more memory. And the customers look at this and say, okay, this is great. I can build applications that run faster, that cost me less to operate, that are more powerful than ever before. So there's this wonderful cycle of we deliver more compute power to our customers. They immediately get very creative and say, what can I do that needs even more compute power than ever before? And it's just a really awesome thing to be able to deliver this to customers and then hear from them the amazing things that they come up with to do with it. Whether they just want to run their databases faster, make their web applications run more quickly, train their machine learning models more quickly and efficiently than before. We depend on all the creativity and innovation that come from our customers.
And you have been the witness for the evolution of the technology from last 20 years, maybe more. Being a blogger, being a writer, and being a communicator, and being a communicator with the computers. So how do you define this evolution? You are saying you came from nothing to something today. So how do
Yes.
you define?
It's been a real special privilege of my career to be able to watch so much evolution in the space of a single career. So I started out working in 1977 in a little computer store, back when personal computers were just getting started. And to watch the evolution from that point to today, you see how Moore's Law comes into effect, From being at Amazon, you get to see the importance of listening to, respecting, and responding to customers. And you get to see really how important of a role technology plays in our lives and our society. And you see for good, mostly good, and sometimes a little bit bad, you just see all the power that this technology brings. And you start to think, okay, this is changing the world. And I never take it for granted. I never just say, well, we have come this far and we've now reached the ultimate. You always say these are all wonderful steps forward, but they're always steps. And no matter what you do, there's always going to be another one that's more efficient, that is less expensive, that does more. You never kind of close the door, and you never say, we've reached the top of the mountain. There's nowhere more to go. You always have to have this eye to the future and say, no matter how far we've come, we're still just getting our journey started. Or we always say at Amazon, we always say it's still day one. And despite well over 40 years in tech, it still feels like day one to me.
So recently I have interviewed a person from Bahrain, the country on this planet. So there are some countries where technology is not much used by human beings, where today AWS is used, and they are talking. The youngsters, like 16 years old, people are becoming solutions architect and talking about AWS services and talking about the importance of it and trying to use it and tell other businesses how to solve it. So what is making AWS to reach from small countries to big countries, from small scale companies to large scale companies who has different kinds of audience?
Sure. So we have customers in, I'd say, pretty much every location around the world that you can imagine. But in addition to customers, we have a lot of great community members. We have members called Community Heroes and Community Builders. These are different programs that we run internal to AWS, where we know that there's a lot of people out in the world that are doing various kinds of things to share knowledge, to build knowledge, to create events, to create videos, to build communities all around AWS. And so one of the things I am always excited about is just to get to meet all these different community heroes and community builders. I met hundreds of them at reInvent, but when I travel, I'm often the guest of a community builder or a community hero. For example, last September, I traveled to South America. I got to travel to Peru and to Chile to meet the AWS communities in both of those countries. And it was super fun to get to meet them, to hear about their successes and their challenges. And it was kind of a different set of audiences. They were a little bit maybe on the earlier in their career than some of the more established locations, but to hear them talk about their excitement for technology, their excitement for the cloud, their understanding that by being strong with technology, by being able to put technology to use, it was going to be good for them and good for their career growth and good for their families and good for their future as well, was really a good reminder of why I do what I do. This, like, spreading knowledge and supporting communities worldwide.
And AWS is used even in space technology. So what do you say about it?
I love that. It's so amazing to hear that we're being used in so many different situations. From literally AWS being launched into space, I know that we one of our snow cone devices actually was on the International Space Station sometime last year. And to see that being up there and to hear that we're actually able to run machine learning models in space, pretty cool. But there's also a lot that is maybe not so visible when we're doing things like supporting various missions, when companies are using the cloud to run very, very large scale engineering design programs and simulations. And to know that what we're doing, that had this very simple starting point with lofty goals, to know that we're now powering, like, getting humans into space and to explore our universe. I find that really interesting and really, really humbling.
So, at last, what do you say to the world who is watching and listening to this?
I always tell people that you need to just dive in on tech. And there's so much distraction in our world today. There's so many things you could choose to get your attention, and some good and some distracting and some entertaining, but maybe not adding value to your life. Deep dive into some tech and understand it, use it to better your life, build something, but then also figure out as a side effect of what you're doing, find a way to share it with other people. Write a blog post, write a book, put some open source code out there. Give a conference talk, tell your friends, tell your family, build that network effect around you. And just the thing is, building and then sharing, it doesn't take twice as much work as simply doing one or the other. So if you build something and you take some good notes as you build, then you share, maybe that adds 20% to your overall effort, but you end up with, not only have you solved your own problem, you have told the world about how to solve the problem, so you're helping some other people. You're improving your own communication skills, so great benefit there. But you're also establishing your identity and your brand and your reputation as someone who knows about, cares about, can speak about whatever particular topic that you want to do. And don't ever think like, well, someone has already done that. Someone's already written about or talked about or done this. People care about you and your brand and your personality, and put that energy into creating it, sharing it, and over the long term, I really believe that is going to work out really well for people.
And what is your observation about my work? Have you seen videos of mine on YouTube?
I love what you're doing. The fact that you're able to talk to so many people all over the world, and to, as we're doing today, get us to share really interesting things and get those out to a great audience. It's a super important thing to do and I love your boldness of simply reaching out and asking people to do things. That is a simple, unappreciated, underpracticed skill of simply asking people for something. And most of the time, people are going to say, sure, I'd be willing to help out. And if not, you've already made the ask, so no big deal if they say no. But they might say, well, I can't help you, but somebody else can. But being bold and reaching out from literally halfway around the world, I think that's just a wonderful skill that people should always practice.
I did master's in software engineering, also bachelor's in computer science engineering. Right now I'm working on AWS cloud services and as a DevOps engineer. I'm a computer guy. I interact with computer. Apart from that, is my full-time role. Apart from that, I'm interacting with people and experts like you who are helping humanity and solving different problems in larger way. So how this experience talking with experts around the world is going to helpful and add value to my career in future?
So, what I think is really awesome about what's happening in the world over the last, I'd say the last 15 to 20 years, when I started in my career, there was this real sense that there was only one place where all the tech was really happening, and that was in Silicon Valley in the US, in California. So it wasn't one country. It wasn't even one state. It was this one little tiny part of the world. And almost every technologist would think, I need to somehow get myself to Silicon Valley to be part of this emerging tech revolution. At this point, Silicon Valley is still important. It's still there, and there's lots of amazing things that happen. But innovation happens all over the world by a much larger group of people with a lot more opinions and backgrounds and viewpoints and challenges and problems to solve. And so if anything that's amazing has happened over the last 20 years, with, I think, especially with the connectivity and with the internet, we can do what we want from almost anywhere in the world. And with more people able to jump in and do that and to participate, to connect, to listen, to learn, to share, I think that's just good.
Can I put this video on my YouTube channel with your permission?
Absolutely.
Also, can I put this audio and video clip on my podcast, website, internet, social media, everywhere with your permission?
The more the better.
So keep going, keep inspiring people like this, Jeff. Thank you.
I'll do the same, and you too. Always great to talk to you.
Thank you, sir, again.
My pleasure. All righty. Bye-bye.
Start Adam. Sales and customer-facing teams often switch between several communication tools, causing time management and visibility issues that can slow down deal velocity. The solution joins Start Adam, where conversation converts. With Start Adam, your team can centralize all communication within your chat tool, no more switching, waiting, or fragmented chats, because chat messaging is where business gets done. Sales teams can stay in Slack or Microsoft Teams and connect with customers, leads, or candidates on their existing chat tool, building better relationships through constant communication in inbound or outbound messaging. Make it encrypted and compliant. Plus, bring all communication in your CRM or ticketing system, no data entry required. Join Start Adam to enhance customer relationships and close deals at hyper speed with unified chat.